Thank you very much, and a good afternoon or morning to all on the call. I'd just like to quickly introduce the nine-month results with a couple of thoughts of my own, and then we turn quickly over to questions. The first, to state the obvious, at 9 months, we do have a very positive result, $1.1 billion U.S. for our net income. I think the magnitude of the losses that we've had from the Nat Cat sector materially different than last year, but the third quarter reminded us that, in fact, these losses will recur and recur across various jurisdictions. The second point, the resilience of our P&C Re business, in spite of those large man-made and Nat Cat losses, $634 million of profit for the first 9 months, annualized ROE above 8%. I think a resilient business, which we expect to continue to be able to grow as we've done modestly in the first 9 months of 2018. Third, the very strong performance, I would argue, of the life and health reinsurance. Again, $640 million of profits for the 9 months, an annualized ROE above 12%. Importantly, also a real growth in this business coming from a combination of an expansion in high growth markets broadly, China specifically, and a continued success in bringing home important transactions in the more developed markets. Fourth, on the investment side, a stable running yield of 2.9%. We've started to see interest rates move up in the U.S., unfortunately not much motion in continental Europe. Nonetheless, we've been able to protect that running yield. Overall, the return on investments of 2.8, if you adjust for the U.S. GAAP change in guidance, it would have been at 3.0 for the 9 months. And last, I'm sure most of you have noticed, the we published a group SST estimate for July 1st of this year, a positive movement from the beginning of the year from 269 at January 1st to 285 at July 1st. This reflects what we believe to be a continuing increase in the value generation of the group. We'll have more details on the full year number when we publish it based on the full year EVM results. And with that, I'd turn it over to our host again today, Philippe Brahin, to manage the questions.
Many thanks, John, and good day to all of you also from my side. So as you know, we have adjusted the format of our reporting, and our comments during the call will be focused on our nine-month results, in line with the scope of our press release. Also, and as usual, I would like to ask you to restrict yourself to two questions and register again for follow-up questions. In the room here today, we have also Edi Schmid, our Group Chief Underwriting Officer, to answer your questions. So with that, operator, could we please have the first question?
The first question is from Edward Morris from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Everyone, thanks for taking my questions. Two, please. The first is on life and health. I wonder if you could just talk a little bit more about the performance there, because you seem to be suggesting that the capital generation under EVM and solvency, Swiss SST, seems to be very strong. So I just wonder if you can talk a little bit more about that and maybe anything that we can't see just from the US GAAP net income figure. And the second question is on your comments about future actions on capital management. Seems to be a sort of slight change in tone from the way you've talked about things previously there. I appreciate you're still referring back to the group priorities, but can you just talk a bit about what you mean there, and is there any sort of timing that you may have in mind for something?
Thank you, Ed. Maybe John, you want to start?
Sure. I think I'll probably take both of those. On life and health, I think we've been trying to emphasize two things. One, based on some important restructuring we did in Life and Health Re in 2013, 2014, we put ourselves on a path to long-term profitability. You see that in the U.S. GAAP results, which have met the target we put out of 10 to 12% ROE. But more importantly, or as importantly, from our point of view, is the continued progress of our EVM results on the life and health side. We haven't released those for 9 months, but if you reach back all the way to year-end 2017, I think you'll see a continued positive movement in the EVM earnings of life and health that actually exceed the U.S. GAAP and demonstrate that the what we're putting on the books today provides the opportunity for future earnings, which will come through the U.S. GAAP's accounts as these portfolios continue to mature. And since the EVM is the basis for the calculations on the SST, that's where you see that positive impact coming through as well. Vis-a-vis capital management, I'd say the tone is not materially different. We've said for quite some time, our goal in the first case is to protect the dividend, to be sure that we are able to fund new business opportunities, deploy the capital organically in the first case, inorganically should the opportunities arise. We've demonstrated examples of this with the bolt-on acquisitions we've done in corporate solutions. And at the end of the day, if we find ourselves with more capital that we can successfully and deploy on a value-creating basis, we will return it to shareholders. We started the buyback program in 2018 without the caveats that we've had in previous years. We're well along in that share buyback program. With respect to any capital management issues regarding 2019, I think it's safe to say we'll wait for our full year results, engage in the appropriate discussions with our own board of directors, and let people know subsequent.
All right, thank you, John. Thank you, Ed, for your questions. Can we have the next question, please?
The next question is from Gandhi Vikram from Societe Generale. Please go ahead.
Oh, hi, thank you for taking my questions. Firstly, can I just check how far is Corso's aggregate cover from attaching? And if you've already had some recoveries, can you share how far is it from the point of exhaustion? Secondly, given some of the recent court rulings in the U.S., can you shed some light on your comfort level around the group's asbestos reserves? Thank you.
Thanks. Maybe, Eddie, you want to take that question?
So the first one, if I understand correctly, is around Corso's aggregate cover we put in place, as we mentioned in previous calls, to protect the portfolio a bit better, not just from large severity type of events, but we have also put something in place that protects them against a series of mid-sized hurricanes. I mean, so far we have the Hurricane Florence, which is closed as a total for the group of 120 million, and about half of that is in Corso. So Corso is still well protected by that aggregate. It's not yet close to that aggregate cover. Yeah. I think that's how I would describe the situation. And the second is around A&E reserves. And actually, our P&C reserves in the third quarter are a tiny bit negative, and that's for the reason as we strengthened A&E to some extent in this quarter. Overall, we think we are now fine, in line with all the different benchmarks we use to set A&E reserves. That's how I would describe A&E.
Thanks, Eddie. Thanks, Vikram, for your questions. Can we have the next question, please?
The next question is from Thomas Seidel from Bernstein. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. Good afternoon. First, ReAssure Life Capital suffered from the weak UK capital markets. I wonder if you could give us an update on how this would influence and where you are actually in your preparations to IPO ReAssure. Is it getting more difficult now? And how are you doing there? And secondly, I go back to this capital thing. I mean, with this SST ratio you published today, you have 11 billion of excess capital according to your own metrics. So you would need to write another 11 billion of premium to consume this capital, which probably is not likely in the next couple of years. So what keeps you actually from making a more significant step, let's say, bring it down by 5-6 billion?
All right, John, back to you.
Thomas, I'll take both of these. With respect to the IPO, what I can say is the preparation continues apace. I really have no new insights for you compared to where we were in August. We specifically said We would expect to be able to go to an IPO sometime in 2019 without being very specific about precise timing. Obviously, we will pay attention to market conditions, but that's not new. It's exactly what we've told you back in August. So, again, nothing changed there. With respect to capital, I take your point that 285 is quite some distance away from 220, and arguably is moving, at least on one dimension, further away during the course of 2018, at least as of July 1st. The year's not over, and let's see where we actually land the year. But the opportunity is for us to rethink where the capital is required will continue to be a point of discussion for the executive committee and ultimately the board of the group. I will suggest that one of the reasons why this number remains relatively high relates to our defensive posturing on asset risk. We remain in a range that's defined by our strategic asset allocation. So there's been no fundamental change in the ranges that we've put on since the beginning of the year, but we remain cautious in accepting additional asset risk. You could imagine situations where some combination of opportunities for writing new reinsurance and primary insurance business plus some increases in asset risk in the future would provide opportunities to deploy a substantial amount of this capital.
All right. Thank you, Thomas, for your questions. Can we have the next question, please?
The next question is from Sami Taipalus from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Afternoon, everyone, and thanks for taking my question. My first one is actually coming back to the capital generation in the first half, which was very strong. Is it possible to give just a little bit more of a breakdown of what was behind that capital generation? I mean, you already alluded, I suppose, a little bit to the life and health reinsurance new business, but if it's possible to just potentially split out any market movements or management actions or anything like that, that would be really helpful. Then the second thing comes back to your, I suppose, comments about dividend capacity. You linked the, capital returns to the SST ratio somewhat in the statement. Is that we should think about it, or do we also need to cross-check it against the capital you have available at the holding company level? Because I guess the two are not necessarily directly linked. Thank you.
Sami, to your latter point, yes, there are multiple dimensions at which we evaluate the dividend capacity of the group. SST is clearly one of them. Available capital that we do have at the holding company, a second, an overall liquidity position. I'd say at the moment that we remain in fairly robust shape on most dimensions, and so that's the starting point, and frankly a good place to be in these times where we've started to see some increase in volatility both in financial markets and some real losses coming through in the third quarter on the insurance side. We're not providing much more detail about the development of the SST at 6 months. I'd remind you that 285 is an estimate. We think it's probably a pretty good estimate, but it's not been audited. It doesn't go through the same rigor that we have for the full year result. And therefore, I think my comments before about relatively modest levels of asset risk in the big picture and a clear capital generation of our first half businesses, including in life and health, is about as much detail as we're prepared to provide at this point.
Thanks, Amy, for your questions. Can we have the next question, please?
The next question is from Andrew Ritchie from Autonomous. Please go ahead.
Oh, hi there. I think both questions for Eddie. First of all, could you give us an update on the sort of re-underwriting at Corso? Well, both, I guess, both partly the re-underwriting you were planning to do, the portfolio cleanups, and also progress on achieved average increase in rates you've managed in Corso to date? And secondly, can I just follow up on the reserve comment you made for P&C Re? I think there was some adverse outside of the asbestos review. Is that the same problem areas as at the first half, which I think was particularly US auto-related liability? Is it something new? Is this part of a sort of lumpy review process? Just any bit more color stroke reassurance would be helpful. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Andrew, for these two questions. So the first one around re-underwriting, both P&C and Corso. I think what we highlighted over the last few quarters that we took quite a different view, particularly on U.S. motor, that's a bit older, but also on U.S. liability. And there, particularly when it comes to large corporate risks, where we've seen just significant large verdicts and settlements. So in our portfolio prioritization, clearly U.S. liability is very much prioritized for what we call risk reduction, margin improvement, and not for growth. Whereas on the other hand, more the short tail business, the property cat business with rate stabilization, even some rate increases, we have started to grow that business a little bit further. And actually we are on a good track to achieve these portfolio actions, and that over time will also help the underlying combined ratio. So there's no change in this prioritization. We'll continue also on this path into 2019. And on the second one regarding the P&C Re reserves, so for 9 months overall, reserve development for P&C Re is positive. It's just the third quarter is a little bit negative. And one comment I made, we strengthened asbestos and environmental a bit. And the other contributor is actually some man-made losses from previous accident years that had to be strengthened this time on the P&C reside, but we don't see any, let's say, underlying worrying trends, and we continue to be very confident with the overall reserves assessed independently at the group actual control level in the 60-80% range. So A&D was strengthened a bit in Q3, and a couple of man-made losses from previous accident years were strengthened. That explains the tiny negative, but overall still in the positive territory for P&C Re.
Thanks, Andrew, for your questions. Can we have the next question, please?
The next question is from William Oaking from KBW. Please go ahead.
Hello, thank you very much. First of all, in Christian Mumenthaler's closing remarks in your press release, he refers to an inflection point in the P&C reinsurance pricing cycle. Could you elaborate on the extent to which that's a confident, forward-looking statement? Because we know that rates increased in the first half of this year, but my understanding was that momentum was very much coming back, if not actually back in a declining mode into January. So could you just discuss a little bit more what you mean by an inflection point for pricing? And then secondly, clearly we don't have all the detail for the 9 months or third quarter, so it's a bit tricky, but you've told us very clearly that P&C Re has had some pretty big NatCats. You've talked about negative reserve development. My inference from that is that the underlying attritional experience has been extremely good since you last reported. Now, is that kind of fair? And if so, you know, why has the underlying experience, excluding cats and reserve development, been so good? Thank you.
Thanks, William. I think, Edie, this is all for you.
Yeah, thanks, William. So on the first one regarding inflection point, maybe if you go back after the record losses in 2017, there clearly was an expectation that there would be a significant inflection point, particularly for P&C Re. We have achieved in our business in P&C Re, on cat business and other parts, some improvement, maybe not as strong as expected. And it's fair to say that momentum was not too strong throughout the year. When we talk about inflection point, I think it's more important not just to look at reinsurance, but to look at P&C business globally. And there, over the course of this year, if you look at all the indices produced, we clearly see positive rate trend now in the commercial businesses. It was still a bit slower in the first 6-9 months. Just more recently, we see even a bit more momentum there in markets like Australia, markets like Germany, where clearly there's more pain than before. We actually see positive momentum, and that paints this picture of an inflection point. And would also refer to a Sigma study we released a couple of months ago, where we analyzed by the Institute the 5-6 biggest P&C markets overall. And there you can clearly see that if you want to achieve a sustainable return on equity above cost of capital, these P&C markets overall, so really the original business, lacks quite a bit of underwriting margin. So this picture together with the losses we see this year, development C in many markets, we feel, yes, this is an inflection year. And then on your second one is the combined ratio for P&C Re at 99.5%. I think it's important to look at it on a normalized basis. We have this significant loss burden from net cats, from man-made. But it's important to differentiate. The first 6 months were actually very benign. We had hardly anything on the reinsurance side. And Q3, as a standalone quarter, clearly is above average. But if you take everything together, both net cat and man-made, this loss burden is broadly in line with what we would expect for the year. And that's also why we still feel the target or the estimate we gave for the full year of 99% combined ratio, we are set to achieve this over the full year. Maybe what is important to reflect that actually the third quarter is quite a heavy one in terms of net cat exposure. So also we earn a lot of the margin in that year. That may give a hint on why the combined ratio could be a bit lower in your analysis. And also what I referred to before, we continue to have a rather cautious stance on U.S. casualty business, while we try to grow a bit more on property cat again, which will also help the combined ratio a bit to trend a bit more to the lower end. Yes, and then obviously we have achieved underlying improvements in the P&C Re book. The quality is improving, so that takes time to earn through, but we start to see some impact of this. So bottom line is, overall for this year, we still think the 99% combined ratio P&C Re is a good estimate.
Excellent. Thank you, Eddie. Thank you very much, William, for your questions. Can we have the next question, please?
The next question is from Kamran Hossain from RBC. Please go ahead.
Hi, everyone. Two questions. The first one is just on, first one's for Eddie. It's on the difference in renewals and the dynamics between, 1-1 and 1-4, and kind of how you think this might impact the 99% combined ratio starting point that you just talked about. So that's the first question. And the second question, and just coming back to reassure, ahead of any potential IPO next year, can you just remind us, are there any additional kind of pockets of capital or anything, any kind of capital optimization that you might be able to do and kind of dividend up to group ahead of that? Thank you.
Thanks. Eddie, you start and then John, I guess.
So your question is about, let's say, the different renewal timings. So you referred to 1-1 and 4-4, maybe also meant to include 1-1-7. Yeah? So we had 1-1, where we only had moderate price increases, was mainly the European book. Then we had Japan, 1-4, where I think the picture was largely flat. And then we had probably some improvement, but also a lot of business flattish into 1-7. Yeah? So actually, it was not a very different pattern across these three renewal cycles. What again is important to understand is how this business is earned. So it's the lag in terms of the renewal cycles, and then is how the business is earned on a GAAP basis. So this year still we earn about 50% of the business written in 2017, where there was rather some quality reduction. And now the business we wrote this year, 50% of this improved business will only be earned into 2019. So there's always this this gap. Yeah, how it will turn out now in 1-1, that remains to be seen. We still expect a flattish type of environment. There's still capital out there in quite abundance, that's fair to say. But as I explained before, there's also losses, there is pain in the system. So for P&C Re, a flattish outlook, I think, is the least we expect.
And sorry, Eddie, my question actually related to the first part of it actually related to kind of your difference in upcoming dynamics for 1-1 versus 1-4. I just feel like okay. 1-6, 1-7 is a little bit far away.
Yeah, so the only point I would make in this respect, obviously there are significant losses out of Japan with Typhoon Chebi, where we said it's about a 6 billion market event and our share about 500 million. There were also smaller losses, so that will clearly drive the dynamics of the 1-4 renewal, which is mainly a Japanese one. And 1-1 is mainly Europe, where there was not significant loss activity. So there, this flat picture is probably a fair view.
Thanks, Eddie. Maybe John on the ReAssure.
On ReAssure, again, not a lot to say vis-a-vis the actual IPO process, other than we continue to move ahead as planned. The one thing I would say is the Life Capital is a division demonstrated a continued strong gross cash generation, up to $1 billion for the first 9 months here. And among other things, this provides opportunities for some flexibility as we think about right capitalization levels and potential dividends before or after IPOs. But the IPO itself is there's no real news on.
Thanks, Cameron, for your questions. Can we have the next question, please?
The next question is from Frank Opfinger from Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon, everybody. I have also two questions. My first question is on your tax effects. Obviously, if whenever you have a high loss burden, there is some sort of offset via tax effects. Can you shed some light on how big they have been in Q3 in P&C and Corso? And then secondly, can you also provide some first view on Hurricane Michael and your potential loss there?
All right. Maybe John on tax and Edie on Michael.
So on tax, you're right. The geography which absorbs the losses has a different tax impact. I would simply suggest we are in a little different world with the U.S. corporate tax down to 21%. The variations are smaller than they used to be. We have put in place the Swiss Re Asia Limited regional holding company in Singapore, which has a even lower tax rate. So some of the tax loss carryforwards from losses that would be booked through Singapore might be even more modest than the 21% that we'd see in either Switzerland or the United States. But you know, net-net, our goal is to make money here, and the after-tax effect, while important to us, is less important than we get back on our feet in terms of the underwriting. On Michael, maybe I'll just jump in for Eddie. We really can't say anything yet about what those losses might be. That will be part of the fourth quarter, and we've got no clear line of sight of either our position or, frankly, our own Swiss Re estimate. You've seen the market estimates here are between $6 and $10 billion. That does not feel unreasonable. Eddie, you might have an additional view.
I would also have quoted some of these loss estimates from vendors, $6 to $10 billion. That's not unreasonable. But I would also point out that Swiss Re is rather a bit underweight in Florida, as we have commented in the past. So, as John said, it's too early to come up with any specific at this point. But also, as we said, we still think the 99% combined ratio is a reasonable estimate for the full year. So I think that describes the picture.
Thank you, Frank, for your questions. Can we have the next question, please?
The next question is from Johnny Hulrin from UBS. Please go ahead.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my questions. Just two quick ones. So firstly, how is the profitability of the casualty book developing in recent underwriting years versus your expectations, please? And secondly, what's your appetite for growth in both P&C Re and Corso going into 2019? Should the pricing environment be flat, and should we expect any mixed changes in P&C? Thank you.
Edie, you want to take the two questions?
So the first one is on casualty quality of the portfolio, as I commented on earlier, particularly in the U.S. market on the motor side, but also on the liability side. Portfolios where we push for risk reduction, for margin improvements. We have achieved some of that this year. We still think that market has to improve further. I think the pain is increasing in U.S. liability. But as always, I would not make too many forward-looking comments on how it turns out. Your second question is more about the outlook in terms of growth. I would also there reiterate what we said earlier with, let's say, a flattish price environment, the quality of our book in good shape. We will capture opportunities, be it on the transactional side, also in some of the core business. CAT business, we clearly have appetite. We like that that business. So with stable pricing or further slight increases, we will also grow in some of these segments. So overall, there is potential for growth, but it goes without saying that we will still do that with underwriting discipline.
All right. Thank you, Johnny, for your questions. Can we have the next question, please?
The next question is from Vinit Malhotra from Mediobanca. Please go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon. So, first question, please, just maybe a bit of extra comment, please, on corporate solutions, where, you know, the 1H growth was 18.5% and the 9-month stage is 9%. Is this just normal volatility? Is it that with management change in Corso, you're making a step change or you're planning some step changes? Just to hear some thoughts on Corso growth, please, in the first half and 9 months. And second question is just a bit more, you know, in last night's reporting, AIG has flagged that they expect a lot of the fourth quarter losses to come to the reinsurance market because their attachment points are being hit. I mean, generally, do you think there's been a bit more aggregate sort of covers being sold to clients from your perspective or market perspective? And are these something that are going to be important as we think of the next year, but also our fourth quarter? Thank you very much.
Eddie, you take both questions?
On the Corso growth, 18 versus 9%. So 9% is for the first 9 months. So that's in line with the strategy to grow that book. And most of that comes from the primary lead initiative, which starts to bear some fruit. And would again also point to the joint venture Bradesco in Brazil that adds to the growth. The reason why it is more in the first 6 months versus now, I think is a one-off effect. Yeah? But I don't want to go into the details there. And the second one regarding this AIG comment, so we'll not comment on any company individually, but your comment was more regarding aggregate covers in the market. I mean, aggregate covers is nothing new, and they have been around for a long time. Swiss Re has written some of those and will also continue to do so. It can be a very good mean to take out volatility from an insurance company, but obviously it will be underwritten with the necessary rigor. Obviously, you have to be careful at this point in time that as a reinsurer, you do not take, let's say, the better part of the business away from the ceding company. So this just has to make sense. But aggregate as such is a valuable reinsurance tool we use to support our insurance company clients with the necessary underwriting discipline. That's a product where actually we made decent returns over many years.
Great. Thank you, Vinit, for your questions. Actually, they are the last questions of the day. So we come to the end of our Q&A session. Thank you very much to John and Eddie. Thank you also for all of you for joining us today. Don't hesitate to reach out to any member of the investor relations team if you have follow-up questions. Thank you again for your participation today. Operator, back to you.